Time for a look at the weekly motoring news with James Ward, the content director for drive.com.au. Oh, I just heard a noise. Whereabouts are you? You're out in the wilderness somewhere, I think.
I am out in the wilderness. I'm currently in the stunning Flinders Ranges in South Australia. So I'm about 7 hours inland from Adelaide. I'm here with the Land Rover, where we've got the Land Rover Defender experience. So we'll be covering this for Drive and for Drive TV, and it'll probably show up in Good Weekend and other bits and pieces as well. But you can do this, and I think this is the thing. This is for Land Rover customers and people who kind of want a bit of adventure in their lives. They can come to this amazing place, the Arkaba Homestead, and go and do an amazing drive with the Land Rover. So you'll be able to catch that on Drive TV in a couple of weeks' time. But I'm here right now.
All right. That's why the noise. Now, look, the big news this week was that Uber has been ordered to pay $272 million in a landmark taxi class action settlement. I think we saw this coming. And the taxi industry, even though it did need a massive kick in the ass, Uber was operating illegally at first, wasn't it?
Oh, totally. And I think the big thing here that we saw was not just the way that they would do, because I remember before Uber, getting a cab, it was a disaster. These guys didn't know where, it was hit and miss. It was not a good experience. But the people who owned those taxi licenses, that was a massive investment for those. These were, you know, family-run businesses who had built up licenses over a period of time. And what happened is the advent of Uber and the way that they were allowed to operate, even though it wasn't legal by the law standards, it basically devalued those taxi licenses from hundreds of thousands of dollars each to next to nothing. And so the taxi industry went from being a bit of a super fund for a lot of self-made Australian families to nothing. And look, this settlement, I think it was a long time coming. It could have been handled so much better, because as we see now, you are getting a ride service car, and it could be an Uber as well as a DD, as well as a cab. And so the system has figured it out, but it was also new. No one knew how to deal with it. And yeah, I think this was a long time coming.
Okay. The taxi industry was in a very poor state. Has the taxi industry improved? Has Uber and Didi and Ola and the rest of these things, but particularly Uber, did they make the taxi industry improve?
No, they've gotten worse. Like, I don't know.
Really?
And this is the thing. Like, so it used to be, to catch a taxi in Melbourne, they were all yellow. They went through this process of like, well, let's go like New York. Let's make the cabs really identifiable. They're all yellow. Mm. Now it could be anything. They don't even have bobbles on the roof. There's a guy. Now get this. There is a guy driving around in a registered cab. So it could pick you up on a rainy night from the MCG in a 1996 Mercedes C-Class. So this is a 30-year-old vehicle that is still operating as a cab. Now, I don't know about you, but that is the worst case example of a poorly regulated industry. And you get into, mate, I've had an Uber who was trying to drive down the freeway doing 60. And I said, what are you doing? Is there a problem with the car? He goes, no, I don't like freeways. I'm like, what's going on? So I don't think we've got a great ride sharing business at the moment. The cabs, I'm using cabs more often than I'll use Ubers, because you tend to get a better quality driver, but it's still pretty hit and miss, and it's costing a fortune. I don't think there's a lot of good for customers out there at the moment.
The taxi industry is currently under scrutiny because there are some rogue drivers that are turning off the meters, or they're refusing trips if it doesn't suit them. This has got to be looked at, hasn't it, if they want to compete?
That's it. You hear these terrible stories of people saying, oh, I need to only go to the next suburb because I'm carrying a heavy bag or whatever. That's why you're getting a cab, and the people refusing to take them. You see these stories of the Uber drivers. They take the booking, then cancel it, then take a booking, then cancel it, because it then pushes the surge rate up, so that then when the person who finally takes it gets it, you're on surge charges, and it costs you even more. Look, do you know what I do? If you can find a good driver, so whether they're a cab driver or they're a hire car driver or whatever, that's the person you need to call. So when I come back from trips, I've got a guy that I call to pick me up at the airport. I know where he's going to meet me. It costs the same as an Uber or a cab, and he's in either a nice Kia Carnival, even as a BMW every now and then. It's the best way to do it. So get to know a driver. That's the way.
James,
otherwise, it's a disaster.
James Ward, drive.com.au. James, one other thing that bothers me about ride shares. I had a driver ring me on air 4 or 5 weeks ago. And he said, because we were talking about the truckies who have work diaries. and they have to log every minute that they're behind the wheel for safety reasons, for fatigue. This guy said that he is limited to 12 hours of driving for Uber, and then Uber shuts him off. He can't communicate with the app again until he's had his designated rest, his 8 hours. But he told me that he then logs on to Didi, and he drives after his 12 hours. He drives for Didi and then logs off and drives for Ola. Now, I take these callers at face value. He said there's no checkup. He can drive for as long as he wants on the three apps.
That's it. That's it. And this is the thing. Like, you've got a lot of people trying to do this as a great way to earn revenue. You hear how little some of these drivers actually get. You think, why are you doing this? Like, the amount of cost it must be to run that car versus everything else with tolls and fuel prices going up and everything. But they're going to find ways to game the system. And because at the end of the day, you've got someone who's struggling to earn money off this. So without proper regulation and without proper care, you're always going to get people who find a way around the rules.
James Ward is with us. Just quickly, James, I went to your website. I saw a magnificent looking HSV VN Commodore Group A, and it's up for sale. This is a car. It's a touring car, racing car, and it's up for auction.
Yeah, and it's sold, I think, yesterday.
It's gone. Right.
Yeah. $135,000, which I've got to say is actually pretty good. People were paying well over this for non-storied cars. But this one, it's not a race winner. This was the pilot car that the TWR, the Walkinshaw Racing and Holden Racing team developed for the VN and the VP, then the VR Commodore race cars. But it's got some pretty interesting history too, because it was used as a promo vehicle as well as a test vehicle. But if you go to the Drive website and have a look at this article, it was used to christen the Sydney Harbour Tunnel back in 1992. And it had a touring car racer, Alan Grice, and who's currently Nine reporter, Liz Hayes, in the car doing what I've heard is in excess of 200 kilometres an hour with an open exhaust V8 through the Sydney Harbour Tunnel. So if you do one thing today, go and watch that video, because it'll put a smile on your face. Good, raw Australian muscle car power in a tunnel run.
But I would have thought it would go for 400, 500,000. I think it went for under 140.
Yeah, that's it. About 100, a bit over 100. Yeah, between 130, 140.
Wow.
I agreed. I thought it was going to get way more. So look, maybe a bit of a bargain for a Holden collector.
Oh, without a doubt. Have a look at it, folks. Drive.com.au. 140,000 or less than 140,000 for a genuine HSV Commodore VN Group A prototype. Unbelievable. James, thank you so much for that. I've got to ask you a question. I was looking online for a product that can get a very small scratch off Nicky's new car. It's only tiny, but you know when you get a new car, and Nicky's car is in such immaculate condition, it's the only scratch on it. But unfortunately, it's all I can see.
Yep.
And so I went online to ask, is there a product that you can use that gets light scratches out of cars without having to have the whole thing repainted? Well, unfortunately for me, now every time I open my computer, I am bombarded with products telling me that they have exactly what I'm looking for. James, is there a product out there that can get scratches out of vehicles?
I would love to say yes, there is a magical product.
I want you to
product,
say yes too.
But there isn't. There is just simply a series of tasks you need to perform and a little bit of hard work. It doesn't need to be the end of the world. You need to prepare the surface. You need to find a filler. Then you need to find a polish. You can do this yourself. It's not too hard. There are kits you can get from like Meguiar's and Turtle Wax and things, but there is no magical TikTok wipe on, wipe off that fixes scratches, sadly.
Oh, this guy, you dab this thing onto a cloth and you swap.
I know, and it just wipes off. And it
says it matches all color paints, and I thought, I don't know how it does that. And I thought, oh, for $44, I thought I'll check with James.
Do you know what? For $44, I tell you what, we'll get one and we'll do a little video showing you what
will
it
you?
Does.
Will you?
Yeah, we'll go and key somebody's car and then run it down.
Okay, well, I'm not going to mention the brand name now, but I will forward you what I found.
Yeah, send me the link and we'll do a test.
I promise you I'll do that right now. James Ward, have fun with your Land Rover.
Mate, I will. I will talk to you soon.
Mate, James Ward, drive.com.au.